You're listening to EPN, the e-podcast network.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success. Today, we're joined by Dr. Fleet Moll, PhD, a consultant, executive coach, and author. His new book, Radical Responsibility, How to Move Beyond Blame, Fearlessly Live Your Highest Purpose, and Become an Unstoppable Force for Good, is set for release in May of this year. Dr. Moll, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
And you're certainly more than welcome. Our pleasure. So, Dr. Moll, what can leaders do to create a work environment that is less fear and blame-based and more resilient and creative?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really begins as leaders as the work we do with ourselves. So, we're all biologically set up to operate from a place of survival and fear, and that can easily get triggered for any of us, and for some of us, it really can dominate. So obviously taking care of ourselves to be more resilient ourselves through taking good care of our health, good nutrition, good exercise, avoiding some of the stimulus too much, just generally taking good care of ourselves and getting enough sleep puts us in a more resilient place to begin with. And then practicing various mindfulness skills or mind training skills is another great way to cultivate greater resilience, so that we ourselves can really kind of radiate that in a sense, and also be more likely to stay in that responsive mode rather than getting triggered into a reactive mode. All it takes is for a leader to get triggered into their own reactivity, that starts to create a very unsafe space for the employees. I assume all of us have probably been around a leader or a boss or somebody that was triggered emotionally. And we suddenly felt very unsafe because of the power imbalance. So it really has to do with taking care of ourselves and also developing good self-regulation skills to really take ownership for, or what I call radical responsibility, for our own physiology to begin with. And then that leads to better skills for regulating our own emotions and really staying in that responsive place. So, our physiology has these, in terms of the autonomic nervous system, has two branches. One upregulates us, and that's the stress response kicking in, and that can be anywhere from mild to extreme. The other branch, the parasympathetic branch, downregulates us, and that can bring us back down a few notches into a zone where we're going to have access to our entire brain and to that place from where we can be responsive instead of reactive and where we can make good decisions. So that balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic branches of the autonomic nervous system is basically regulated by the breath. The in-breath up-regulates, the out-breath down-regulates. So we can learn simple self-regulation tools like one called straw breathing, where we're breathing in through the nose, out through pursed lips. We extend the out-breath twice as long as the in-breath, and just doing that for a minute will bring us from a highly agitated state right back down to a much calmer state, where we have access to the entire brain. And again, we can be in that responsive mode instead of the reactive mode. So that's a start.
I'd say it certainly is. And also, does self-criticism harm our confidence, or is it necessary in order to work towards self-improvement and optimal performance?
It depends on what you mean by self-criticism. In general, I would say no. Self-honesty is very important. I think we need to be able to look ourselves in the mirror and be very objective about our own performance and our own behaviors. And I think soliciting feedback from our mentors, our peers, and our reports is very important. And to be able to look at that feedback objectively, but without self-blame. If by self-criticism you mean self-blame, that's not helpful. And especially when we have that ongoing self-talk that's very critical or full of self-blame, that can be very undermining to our confidence and very undermining to our performance.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also, how can increasing our capacity for mindfulness impact our productivity?
Mm-hmm. Well, mindfulness, it's not exactly a miracle cure or panacea for everything. On the other hand, having said that, it's pretty amazing. The current neuroscience says that not only does regular mindfulness practice of some kind, and this could be, anywhere from 10 to 15, 20 minutes a day, the more the better, but some kind of formal mindfulness practice, so mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breathing, what sometimes is called a meditation practice, but more properly, it's just mind training, that not only does that help the brain be more neuroplastic, we've known for the last 50 years or so that the brain is not fixed. The phenomenon of neuroplasticity means the brain can change and it's continually restructuring based on what we expose it to. So mindfulness as well as physical exercise are the two things that most increase neuroplasticity for us. And mindfulness actually not only increases neuroplasticity, but nudges the brain's performance and restructuring in a positive direction. So the science is very clear. Regular mindfulness practice leads to a more positive outlook, greater cognitive and emotional balance, able to rebound from any kind of upset more quickly, strengthens that ability to put the brakes on when it no longer makes sense to be upset about something. Just really gives us a greater capacity to be in that responsive place. And also dramatically increases our focus. So in terms of productivity and focus, being able to remain, you know, to direct the cognitive balance, to be able to direct my attention where I want it to be, and, you know, keep it there in a relative sense, and being able to self-regulate my emotions to stay in the responsive mode, all those things, and then just having more focus is going to help me be more productive, and it's going to enhance my performance in many different ways.
And thanks for your response today. We're speaking with Dr. Fleet Maul, PhD, a consultant, executive coach, and author of the new book coming out in May of this year, Radical Responsibility, How to Move Beyond Blame, Fearlessly Live Your Highest Purpose, and Become an Unstoppable Force for Good. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, why do you think it's important for leaders to have strong emotional intelligence?
Well, this is absolutely critical. So if you look at Daniel Goleman's model of emotional intelligence, you have four quadrants. You have self-awareness and you have self-regulation. So that's on the self side. Then you have social awareness, and then you have effective relationship management or effective communication skills. That's on the sort of external side, the other side. So self-awareness has to do with our capacity, which is very tied into mindfulness and awareness practices, our capacity to have greater clarity about our own thoughts, emotions, behavior patterns, habitual patterns, emotional triggers, all the rest of it, and have greater self-understanding, greater self-empathy around all that. Overall, to over time create a much more positive internal landscape that's not so driven by negative core beliefs of like I'm not enough or this or that, but really beginning to tap into a confidence in our own innate goodness, basically. And so all that self-awareness and a more positive internal landscape increases our capacity for self-regulation. In other words, to be able to constantly place ourselves in that optimal state for whatever it is, whatever activity we're doing, whether it's responding to a crisis or normal workplace behaviors, or whether it's wanting to really slow down and go to sleep and get a good night's sleep, or just be at home with our family, or whatever it might be. So that capacity for self-regulation allows us to place ourselves in the optimal physiological, emotional and cognitive state for whatever it is we're wanting to do in the moment. And then, of course, social awareness is our ability to tune into others, both one-on-one and in a collective sense with a team, with an organization, and really in an empathic way have a better understanding of what other people are feeling and what they're needing. And, of course, having that data means we're just going to be more skillful. You know, with self-awareness, we're getting more data, better data, more accurate data about ourselves, which leads to a natural capacity to self-regulate. Social awareness, we're getting more data, better data, more accurate data about the people we're interacting with, and that allows us to interact with them more skillfully. It also has a service orientation and really understanding the dynamics of any organization, any team, and you know, how you get things done, how you move things forward, how you inspire people, how you motivate people, what is the culture of the organization and team you're operating within. All that is part of social awareness. And having that understanding and that data naturally increases our capacity to communicate with others in effective ways, which is the fourth quadrant of relationship management. And the thing about mindfulness and mind training is it enhances all those. So often, you know, what I call Radical Responsibility in my new book is basically a manual, basically a mindfulness-based emotional intelligence manual for personal evolution and, you know, societal or organizational change or effectiveness. So, you know, that combination of cultivating greater mindfulness and awareness within ourselves and the world around us, and with this focus on cultivating those capacities within Goleman's model, really sets leaders up to be as effective as they possibly can.
Now, as far as shame is concerned, can we learn from shame? What's your perspective there?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a funny word because people understand it in different ways. My bias, and I'll acknowledge it's my bias, is that there really is not a positive version of shame. Some people talk about positive shaming as a motivator for human beings. I think they're talking about something else, maybe regret or remorse. But shame is really the emotion we feel at the prospect of having love withdrawn, connection withdrawn, relationship withdrawn. In other words, we're being kicked out of the club, kicked out of the tribe, and so forth. And so that's what the shame experience is. And, you know, going all the way back to Marshall Thurber and even Professor W. Edward Deming, you know, they looked at that any time or energy that we place in blaming others, justifying our own behaviors, or shaming ourselves, which is self-blame, is just completely inefficient. It doesn't get us anywhere. And that's why the emphasis on responsibility of taking ownership for my own thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and results is placing my energy where I can actually do something about it, which is with myself. So blaming others, blaming myself, shaming myself, or setting myself up to be shamed by others is all just a completely inefficient use of my own time and energy, and actually can be incredibly undermining. And also the problem with shame is we've all gotten our doses of it through our child's upbringing. It's a human condition. We can't avoid it. And it's a very powerful emotion and a very toxic emotion in my view, but also a very powerful self-reference. So it's like when we're growing up, any reference point for existence is better than none, right? Because when we're 3 months old, 6 months old, 9 months old, the alternative is kind of black hole of emptiness. So we grab on to whatever reference points there are. And for those of us that experience, you know, got our share of the shaming growing up, that becomes a very powerful reference point. And we will then unconsciously seek that as an adult because we set ourselves up for shame. And it's like, okay, I'm here. That's familiar. I know that, right? So I personally think shame is a very toxic emotion and unnecessary. Having a sense of, you know, remorse or regret or just acknowledging to ourselves, being honest about our failings and our limitations, and certainly when we've had impact on others, to repair that, feel remorse and regret, those are very positive things. But I think shame and guilt are very different. They undermine our sense of self-worth and that confidence in our own innate goodness. That's my bias around the word shame.
Well, Dr. Mall, a lot of great information shared here today and the time you spent with us. Really appreciate that. If listeners wanted to pick up your book or to be in touch and get further information on you, where is the best place online to take care of business?
Yeah, well, the book has its own website. So it's radicalresponsibilitybook.com, radicalresponsibilitybook.com. And it's available for pre-order now at your favorite bookseller, whether that's Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or some of the others. And you can also go directly to the publisher, Sounds True. But the book's website, where you can read about the book, get more information, and read some of the endorsements there that are from people like Daniel Goleman, the person who's most popularized emotional intelligence, and many other thought leaders, you can find all that information right there at radicalresponsibilitybook.com.
And that certainly works. Again, Dr. Mall, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you, Eric. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
It certainly is, and look forward to our next conversation. We've been speaking with Dr. Fleet Mall, PhD, a consultant, executive coach, and author of the new book, Radical Responsibility, How to Move Beyond Blame, Fearlessly Live Your Highest Purpose, and Become an Unstoppable Force for Good. And for further details, visit either fleetmall.com or radicalresponsibilitybook.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of VPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
This is the ePodcast Network.